This show is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Getting America back on track. Bill Martinez live.
By Molly Ball, politics writer for The Atlantic. Jerry Seib, the Washington Bureau Chief for The Wall Street Journal. Ed O'Keefe is a political reporter for The Washington Post. Jerry Seib, let's start with you. Hillary Clinton sat down with the FBI. What is the status of that issue and her campaign at the end of this week?
Well, I think the interview with the FBI is an indication that the inquiry into the email use, the question of whether classified information was mishandled, is nearing the end. I think it's been clear for months that a final step, if not the final step, would be the interview with the secretary herself. And I think most people have believed this is probably headed toward a conclusion that will stop short of criminal action and no indictment. The problem is the Bill Clinton meeting means that even if that's the conclusion, there'll be this little cloud hanging over a successful end. And I think in tennis, John, they call that an unforced error.
Well, you know, and that's what Scott and I were just talking about. And even with Liz Peek earlier, is that, you know, this is an unforced error, but maybe not so unforced error. It's purposeful. I don't know that progressives do anything casually. That's the thing. You can really get brain bruised over trying to understand what the Clintons are up to, what the Obamas are up to, you know, what the president is trying to tell us about, you know, these certain, you know, certain things, whether it has to do with immigration or terrorism and the sort. But here it is. You know, Bill Clinton's going to wait at the Bill Clinton, former president, is going to wait 30 minutes, and somehow they're going to try to give us the narrative that it was just one of those happenstance meetings. I mean, he had to wait there on the tarmac. He couldn't do, you know, FaceTime with her. He couldn't pick up a phone and talk to her. He had to do it face-to-face on the tarmac in Phoenix, of all places, and we're told there's not a whole lot of there. You know, this is the problem, you know, with Clinton's, and that really bothers me. Here it is, as leaders. And, you know, a president, a would-be president, a secretary of state, people who have served our country, in, you know, for 30-plus years, you know, combined probably 60, 70 years that they've served our country. And they got all this junk with them. They have all this luggage with them that is that takes away from their potential greatness, that just adds confusion and messes up the whole legacy. And I don't care, you know, you go from, you know, Monica Lewinsky and what he did in the Oval Office and the affairs and all this stuff, and Hillary with all her manipulation and the, you know, the things that we hear about her that Secret Service people are sharing with us. And, you know, other people like Ed Klein who have known the Clintons and studied the Clintons for, what, 15 years. And you just go, wow, you know, maybe this stuff isn't made up after all. Maybe there's something there. Because you see plenty of smoke, and like the old saying goes, where there's smoke, there's fire. And here it is with this FBI investigation. They have a three-hour meeting with her, and I assume it was, you know, probably to seal up a couple of questions and maybe even to come up with some sort of strategy that says, well, you know, we're going to give her a way out. But, you know, just like Steve said, there is no question whatsoever that this happenstantial meeting on the tarmac in Phoenix is not going to have some influence. People are going to perceive that and saying, look, if there is not some, you know, some criminal, you know, conclusion to this whole situation, because you hear people on both sides, you know, that say, yeah, this is criminal. I don't know how to, you know, look at it any other way. Of course, you have others that no matter what, you know, short of the blue dress, you know, they're still innocent. And, you know, that's the thing about people that are deceptive. Sooner or later, you know, like my dad says, you just tell one lie too many and it finally catches up with you. But there is no doubt that the whole issue of plausible deniability, the Clintons have turned it into a work of art.
Today, how to incorporate your business in just 10 minutes so you won't lose everything if you get sued. Step 1, stop putting it off. If you're not incorporated and someone sues your business tomorrow, it's not just your business at risk. You can lose everything, your home, your car, even your life savings. Step 2, call the following number for a free 10-minute incorporation guide from Incorporate.com. 1-800-941-5257. They don't provide legal or financial advice. They just make incorporating quick and easy. So you can incorporate or form an LLC in just 10 minutes. That number again is 1-800-941-5257. Step 3, congratulate yourself. By taking just 10 minutes to incorporate your business or form an LLC, you protected your home, your car, and your life savings. And that is how you incorporate your business in just 10 minutes. But hurry while they're still giving away these 10-minute incorporation guides for free. Call 1-800-941-5257. That's 1-800-941-5257.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do it.
Bill Martinez Live, a program about current events, our culture, our values, our politics, and our future. And now, Bill Martinez.
Welcome back, America. Bill Martinez here, just about 6 minutes after the top of the hour. As always, good to have you along with us. For more information on the show, BillMartinezLive.com. That's where you want to go. Our next guest, David Hanna, is back with us to talk about his latest book, Rendezvous with Death, The Americans Who Joined the Foreign Legion in 1914 to Fight for France and for Civilization. David, good to have you back with us. How you doing?
That's great to be back. Doing fine.
Hey, well, in 1914, we had seven American expats drop everything to risk their lives for freedom and democracy and the French Foreign Legion. This is an incredible story that you write about in Rendezvous with Death. What made these expats so significant and interesting for you?
Well, I was inspired by their commitment and their willingness to take that kind of those kinds of risks for really what was really an ideal. Of course, America hadn't been attacked, and we were neutral at that time and stayed neutral till 1917. Mm-hmm. They were hoping to sort of lead by their example. And the seven that I emphasize represented more or less a cross-section of the society at that time, geographically, socioeconomically, and racially. So it was a way to sort of tell the story of America, too. But there were more than the seven. There were approximately about 60 or so that volunteered in those first few months of the war. Mm-hmm. And some of their stories are also interwoven, but that seven formed the core.
Well, it's amazing that you say the seven core, but the other 60 people total that were involved, they understood that this was a fight for liberty. And when liberty is challenged like this, not everybody sees it quite like that, do they?
No, and I think even to a certain degree today. I mean, if you look at the debate among historians, you know, that you could look at France and Germany and Britain, Russia, and so forth. They were all big empires, and they were had colonies abroad and whatnot. And that's true. But if you look in Europe itself, and you look at it in this concept of Western civilization, France was a democracy. Individual rights were respected there. In Germany, you did have elections, and you had a Reichstag like our Congress, but it didn't have any oversight over foreign policy, and most importantly, the military. Mm-hmm. It was a small circle of people around the Kaiser, his generals and advisors, and they were autocratic. Sometimes it was referred to as not a state with an army, but an army with a state. And that was what they felt needed to be stopped, that France was a sister republic. And some even felt there was, you know, they hearkened back to the days of the revolution and Lafayette, Rochambeau, mm-hmm. and they were aware of that, even though, of course, that was many generations previous.
Well, you know, again, just to stay on this and focus on this mental condition that we have, even as you reference here in this country, this casualness about freedom. Freedom is not free. I mean, here we've celebrated the 4th of July, and it's somehow we get casual about it, and so much is lost in translation with our casual attitude about liberty.
It's interesting. Alan Seeger, who was probably the most articulate of the volunteers I wrote about, he was a poet, but he also wrote a byline for a New York paper during the time. Mm-hmm. He had similar sentiments, and he had expressed them at various times in his poem. He's pretty explicit about it. He was a big supporter of Theodore Roosevelt. Roosevelt was an interventionist. He felt the United States needed to get involved in the war because Germany needed to be stopped, that it wanted to be hegemonic in Europe and even beyond. And America, because we have the Atlantic on one side and the Pacific on the other, you know, we were fascinated by news of the war, but we didn't want to get involved. And there was sort of a, yeah, it was an attitude that, you know, this is not our fight. And, it's not going to threaten our liberties. But as it turned out, both at sea and then later on with a secret offer that the Germans made to Mexico, which they were hoping that Mexico could provide some sort of diversion if Germany went to war with the United States. The people realized, it took a while for them to get there, but they realized that, you know, it was our fight. But you're right, and this is something that comes through in the poetry quite a bit. Seeger was a big, he wasn't a very big fan of Wilson. He couldn't understand why Wilson wasn't willing to get the U.S. involved more directly.
Well, I understand war is not a beautiful thing, and nobody wants to go to war. I mean, it's like, oh, I got nothing better to do. Let's go to war today. But the fact of the matter is, like the old saying goes, you may not be interested in war, but war is interested in you, which tells me that when there is a season of war, which we're told in the cycle of times and seasons, then you better be prepared. If not, you're going to be overrun. And case in point, maybe what America finds itself in today is that we're at war, but nobody is declaring one yet, at least on our side.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it might you could draw some parallels. Of course, we're in terms of dealing with nation states and dealing with non-state actors and all that's a little more complex. I think we deal with today, but I see what you mean that you have to confront these forces that don't respect democracy, they don't respect individual rights, and if you don't, eventually you may have to confront them in a way that you didn't anticipate.
It's like that old Pennzoil commercial, David, that says you can pay me now or pay me later. The axiom being that when we pay later, much more is involved and it gets to be costlier. And this is a tough deal. I mean, I have a lot of respect for the generals and those policymakers that are keeping an eye on the national threats. And, you know, the purpose of your book and in looking over history, and I love history, and I love your heart and passion for it, David. It's that so that we will learn from what's happened in the past and what these stories are telling us, and they're speaking loud and clear over the ages, is that, you know, this stuff happens. And you gotta, you know, you have to be prepared. You know, you can't be sticking your head in the sand and hope that maybe it's going to go away, because when it raises its head, war is coming to get you.
Yeah, I mean, Wilson eventually came around to preparedness. You get prodded a lot by Roosevelt, Theodore Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually
right.
came around.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Roosevelt's cousin, Franklin, had to deal with the same issues, I'm sure you were in the 30s.
Exactly.
Early 40s, you know. I mean, it was, you know, so, you know, isolationism, you know, it's a strong part of a streak in our history. And a lot of that goes back, of course, all the way back to Washington's farewell address in 1796, you know, when he urged us to stay out of European affairs. But on the other hand, times change and situations change. You know, you never step in the same river twice. And,
right.
And so,
well, I think that's part of the challenge in this whole globalistic perspective that we have. I think the challenge is to find the balance. You know, where does globalism, what part does it play in the mix? I think it's a part of the recipe. I don't think it's the recipe. It's part of it because I think nationalism still plays an important part, and that's an integral element to this whole mix. But I don't think we're quite at that point yet to be able to blend these efforts together. But I digress for just a moment, and I want to stay, you know, get back into, you know, your book and the stories here that you've revealed in Rendezvous with Death. We talked about the one gentleman who was the poet and his indictment on the, you know, the party politics at the time, that, you know, America's resistant to get involved, but for him it was inevitable.
Yeah, I mean, it was hard for him to understand. But on the other hand, to be fair, he was living in Paris starting in 1912, so it was more immediate to him.
He could see it up close and personal.
Yeah, and a lot of them were like that. They were spending time there, and mm-hmm. they had friends who might have been French who were, had been called up. They got their papers and so forth.
David, let's pick it up from here because we got to go to a quick break. So excuse me for interrupting you. David Hanna, Rendezvous with Death. More from David right after this. Stay with us, America.
During the day and lower during nighttime sleep. However, many with high blood pressure don't exhibit this nighttime dip, a condition called non-dipping. More in today's AARP health tip after this.
At Walgreens, getting diabetes testing supplies with Medicare Part B is a walk in the park. Really? Because getting what you need is quick and easy, giving you more time for other things. There's $0 out of pocket on all major brands like Accu-Check and Walgreens TrueMetrics, and no extra paperwork. So managing diabetes becomes a stroll down easy street, or a trip to the movies, or even a day at the beach. Talk to your pharmacist today. Walgreens, at the corner of happy and healthy.
Zero out-of-pocket costs when billed to Medicare and full coverage supplemental insurance.
Non-dipping is a major risk factor for stroke, heart attack, and kidney disease. But studies show taking one or more of your prescribed blood pressure medications just before bedtime significantly decreases the risk. Of course, never change the timing of your medications without first consulting your doctor. For more, go to AARP.org.
Are you tired of commuting to a job that makes someone else rich, working harder than ever, but getting nowhere? Do you hate spending hundreds of dollars every week on daycare, having someone else raise your children? With our opportunities, you can start earning money as soon as next week. You get to be the boss, work from home, and live a happier life. At Be the Boss Network, you'll find hundreds of work-from-home opportunities that you can literally start today and be earning money as soon as next week. Go to freedom106.com and start earning money as soon as next week. You get to be the boss. Get out of the rat race. Work from home. Go to freedom106.com right now and change your life today. That's freedom, the number 106.com. Go to freedom106.com and start earning money as soon as next week. You be the boss. Go to freedom106.com.
You've seen crazy diets to lose weight. At GCN Team, our healthy body weight loss system simply neutralizes the body, bringing down cravings. It has been proven that nutritional deficiencies drive appetite for carbs, sugars, and fats. Lose weight the easy way. Find us at GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. Fighting cravings is a fool's game. Give the body what it needs to be satisfied. Again, 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.
If you're considering going back to school, ask yourself the following questions. Do you need the flexibility to take classes on your schedule? Do you have college credits you need transferred? Do you want to earn a quality degree from a world-renowned university? If you answered yes to any of these questions, Arizona State University is the perfect school for you. Arizona State University offers over 100 highly ranked degree programs 100% online. You'll earn the same degree as you would on campus, from wherever you are, on your schedule. Plus, ASU Online accepts most transfer credits. For information, call 1-800-933-1430. Learn for yourself why the Wall Street Journal ranks ASU fifth in the nation for producing the best qualified graduates, and why 90% of ASU grads are recruited within 90 days of graduation. Learn to grow, learn to succeed, and learn to thrive at Arizona State University. To learn more about ASU Online degrees, call 1-800-933-1430. That's 1-800-933-1430.
Worried about lead, fluoride, and other contaminants in your drinking water? Get a ProPure with the Pro1G 2.0 cleanable reusable filter and remove up to 200 contaminants. Drink water the way nature meant it to be. Clean, crisp, and refreshing. See the complete line of ProPure products, including the new ProMax shower filter. There's a ProPure for you. Visit your authorized ProPure dealer for details or ProPureUSA.com. That's ProPureUSA.com.
You're listening to Bill Martinez live.
Welcome back, America. 19 minutes after the top of the hour, Bill Martinez here. Our conversation with David Hanna continues. His brand new book, Rendezvous with Death, The Americans Who Joined the Foreign Legion in 1914 to Fight for France and for Civilization. David, let's get into the stories. You picked some selective men, seven men in Rendezvous with Death, which you said epitomized 60 that joined, this war effort in France.
Yes, well, one of them, going back to where we left off, Kiffin Rockwell and his brother Paul, they were working in an ad agency in Atlanta. They were actually descended from a Civil War veteran who had helped raise them, their maternal grandfather. Mm-hmm. And they booked passage on a steamship. They weren't even in Paris. So it was more idealistic in terms of them seeing this as Kiffin Rockwell said, I believe it's the cause of all humanity. Mm. That we have to get involved. And he also felt that there was a historical debt as well that it was, I mentioned previously. Mm. You had John Bow, really interesting figure. I'm a middle-aged man myself, and he was 45 years old, had four kids.
Oh, wow.
He was the ex-mayor of Canby, Minnesota, on the edge of the Great Prairie. He had served in the Spanish-American War, so, you know, in terms of doing his duty, he'd more than done that already. But he felt he had to go, and just learning about training for the Foreign Legion, what that was like, because that was a pretty rough outfit. Just a 45-year-old man, you know, getting through training is impressive enough. But then he served in combat for two more years. I just thought that was so fascinating. And then there's an African-American boxer, a guy named Bob Scanlon. Mm-hmm. Of course, at that time, options were limited. And so he decided to go to Europe to try to make his name. And in London and Paris, he had started his boxing career and had some success and was fairly popular. And when the news came of the war, he felt, you know, this is a city and a country that has given me some opportunities here. And, you know, I want to fight, but he wanted to fight with the Americans because these were his friends, Seeger and Chapman and Rockwell. They were Harvard grads like Victor Chapman, David King, and others. These are two that I focus on. Both of them left behind the letters and or memoirs that were really quite insightful. Came from fortunes, really. But, mm-hmm. you know, they were willing to put themselves on the line and, you know, serve in the Legion, like I said, which is a very rough outfit. The conditions in the trenches, which your listeners, any of them familiar with World War One, and the images that come to mind, were as bad or worse than what comes to mind. It was very rough conditions. And then William Thaw, who was a Yale dropout, another guy came from a great fortune. He was really into aviation. He has been described as a stunt pilot, but I think he was a more serious aviator than that. He served in the trenches in the beginning. There wasn't an opportunity for serving the air until later. Then he helped found the Lafayette Escadrille, which is quite famous.
Well, of course, he went on to become a flying ace, so he was no slouch.
Oh, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. He was a consummate professional.
Well, amazing. So how do you, you know, when you go to research things like this, you kind of refer to it ever so slightly, but I want to get into a little bit more of how you got this information.
It started out doing some, I had a project in mind possibly about the Lafayette Escadrille, which more is known about. There's been films, books. So I was reading, and one of the things that kept getting my attention was the period before the squadron was formed, but when they mm-hmm. first volunteered, some of the guys who later on went into the squadron. And then what happened to the guys that that didn't go into the aviation, you know? Like, what about them? They stayed in the trenches. It was sort of the other guys. And that kept coming up, and that interested me. And then, of course, I looked at the sources for some of this material, and then I went back to the primary sources, which were the core, really five of those seven left behind, either letters, a substantial amount of letters, memoirs, or in the case of Alan Seeger, poems, which were described in their experience, trying to right. convey that to the American public. And that was really the core, but then also periodicals, because as I said, this was being covered in the newspapers. Some of them were even writing bylines in American newspapers. Some of them came from pretty prominent families like William Thaw and so forth, so they were getting covered in the news, in the press. And then the French press. This was really quite interesting. I had a researcher that was working with me, translator, and we delved into the French press, and they were very aware of the Americans, and they fully understood, even though they were small in number, how potentially important they could be and perhaps swaying the United States public opinion to move towards wanting to intervene. And they really appreciated the Americans that fought and fell. They eventually erected a really moving, beautiful monument in the 16th Arrondissement in Paris to the volunteers. All their names are listed there, and there's a winged figure bringing together the French and American troops, and above it is a statue sort of not quite clear if it's bidding farewell or greeting you. And mm-hmm. it's based on Alan Seeger's visage. The sculptor himself said that, the French sculptor cool. that made it. And they were very aware of that, and they really appreciated it. And so that was really that's the core. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you know, going into various secondary sources, trying to get an understanding of the historical sort of context, writers like Barbara Tuchman, for instance.
Right, exactly. Well, our conversation with David Hanna continues. His book, Rendezvous with Death, The Americans Who Joined the Foreign Legion in 1914 to Fight for France and for Civilization. David, what is the advice, what is the message that's echoing from this era to the 21st century? What would you say?
I think that it's important to understand that the, you know, if you value things like democracy, individual rights, a respect for art, culture, history, that where that, wherever that's being challenged, I think that at least an awareness of it, I think, is important. Not everybody's going to go pick up a rifle and join the Foreign Legion, let's face it. But I think that having an awareness of those things is important. We as Americans, we're very lucky to live in a country that has, you know, we have opportunities here that a lot of people don't have elsewhere. And I think that, you know, you said the casualness. I don't know if casual is quite the right word, but I would just say having an awareness and caring about what's happening elsewhere. And because we are living in this one planet and, we are all human. And I think that, and I think probably you would agree, or most of the, I would hope the listeners would agree that things like democracy, individual rights, the arts, these are important things. These are,
exactly.
These are values that we cherish and, they're worth standing up for.
Exactly. Well, that's what happens is there is a time in life when you have to put your money where your mouth is, I guess, and demonstrate your commitment and be able to defend those things that you respect and honor. That's why I say maybe we're too casual, and we need to understand that these are valuable issues, and unfortunately we don't realize it until sometimes it's too late or we lose it. What was the importance of the French Foreign Legion in the effort leading up to the beginning of the war?
They served abroad. They were sort of expendables because they were foreigners, as I mentioned. And, but they were known for being on really excellent on the attack. That was their forte. And so they were used in a lot of the major offensives right in the beginning to try to break the Germans to achieve the desired objectives. And in some cases, of course, the losses were extreme. And the Americans, because they joined the unit, because it was the only unit they can join without giving up their U.S. citizenship, that's why they got put in this unit. They, of course, were in the middle of all that. So the Second Battle of Artois, the offensive in Champagne, these are in 1915. Of course, the defense at Verdun, almost every French unit was recycled through there at one time or another, which was just an absolute meat grinder. And then the great offensive on the Somme, which was predominantly a British show, but the French also were in support of that offensive. That's where Alan Seeger was cut down and died on the 4th of July, 1916.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, we know these soldiers influenced the U.S. government finally in joining the war, right?
They did, you know, and if you look back, you know, at the progression of American involvement, it's not a direct necessarily linked, but I think it's cumulative and incremental.
Right.
And over that time, all of these things play a part in turning American public opinion. Of course, there was a lot of things, like I mentioned, going on at sea that had a lot to do with it as well.
Well, I'll tell you, this is
but
a great read, matter. Ladies and gentlemen. I highly recommend you get your hands on his book. David Hanna has been our guest. Rendezvous with Death, The Americans Who Joined the Foreign Legion in 1914 to Fight for France and for Civilization. David is a high school history teacher. You can tell he loves history. We appreciate his passion. And, of course, this book, he's also an adjunct professor at NYU. David Hanna, thank you for being with us on Bill Martinez Live.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Blood pressure tends to run higher during the day and lower during nighttime sleep. However, many with high blood pressure don't exhibit this nighttime dip, a condition called non-dipping. More in today's AARP health tip after this.
At Walgreens, getting diabetes testing supplies with Medicare Part B is a walk in the park. Really, because getting what you need is quick and easy, giving you more time for other things. There's $0 out of pocket on all major brands like AccuCheck and Walgreens TrueMetrics, and no extra paperwork. So managing diabetes becomes a stroll down easy street, or a trip to the movies, or even a day at the beach. Talk to your pharmacist today.
Walgreens at the corner of Happy and Healthy.
Zero out-of-pocket costs when billed to Medicare and full coverage supplemental insurance.
Non-dipping is a major risk factor for stroke, heart attack, and kidney disease. But studies show taking one or more of your prescribed blood pressure medications just before bedtime significantly decreases the risk. Of course, never change the timing of your medications without first consulting your doctor. For more, go to AARP.org.
I'm Nick Soboleski, a SelectQuote agent with a true story that could save you hundreds of dollars a year. A woman named Linda just called. Her husband, Ray, has a $300,000 group life insurance policy, but is changing jobs and can't take it with him. Well, I impartially shopped the highly rated term life insurance companies we represent and found Ray, who is 41 and takes medication to control his cholesterol, a 10-year, $500,000 policy, for under $26 a month. That's almost twice the coverage for less than half of what he had paid. If SelectQuote hasn't shopped for your life insurance, you're probably paying too much.
For your free quote, call 1-800-403-4885. That's 1-800-403-4885. 1-800-403-4885. Or go to SelectQuote.com. We shop, you save. Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your price can vary depending on your health issue and company and other factors. Not available in all states.
Dangerous blood clot device alert. If you or a loved one had an IVC filter placed to prevent blood clots from traveling to your heart or lungs and suffered an injury, you may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. The FDA warns that IVC filters may cause serious complications, such as heart or lung damage, internal bleeding, and even death. These dangerous blood clot devices can break, and the metal fragments can travel to your heart or lungs, causing serious injuries. If you or a loved one suffered organ damage or other injuries from an IVC filter, you may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. Act now. Time is limited to file a claim. For a free consultation and free information, call Injury Help Desk at 800-478-1507. 800-478-1507. 800-478-1507.
This is an advertisement. Paid non-attorney spokesperson. InjuryHelpDesk.com is responsible for this advertisement. Principal Office, Las Vegas, Nevada.
Just the way you like me, fresh every day. Welcome back, America. Coming at you 3 hours every Monday through Friday from 9 to noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific. As always, it's an honor to have you along with us, joining in this good fight to get this country back on track. Now, let me give you a name that you haven't heard about. Maybe you've not even heard at all. Enid Mikkelsen. Now, remember that name, Enid Mikkelsen. Now, she is the convention rules chairwoman who is going to referee a fight between pro-Trump and anti-Trump delegates. And here to tell us more about her is Tim Alberta. Tim is the National Review's chief political correspondent. Tim, welcome to Bill Martinez Live. How are you?
I'm doing well. Good morning.
Hey, good morning to you. A lot of people, supposedly afraid of this woman. She's wielding a lot of power going into this convention in Cleveland here in a couple weeks.
Yeah, that's right. She has an enormous amount of latitude to kind of steer this committee and its proceedings in the way that she wants. And you've got, obviously, a pretty big fight brewing on that committee between some folks who are committed to ousting Trump as the nominee in Cleveland and lots of other folks who are, you know, pretty determined to stop those folks and to, protect Trump from any efforts of a mutiny there in Cleveland. So, and she is at the center of all of this because she was appointed by the Republican National Committee Chairman Reince Priebus to chair this committee. It's traditionally viewed as the most powerful chairmanship at the convention. And she is a bit of an unknown. She is not sort of a traditional power player in Republican circles. She is a little bit behind the scenes, but she's certainly not somebody with a big national profile. And
exactly.
So that gives people on both sides a little bit of unease.
Well, Tim, if she was selected, hand-selected by Reince Priebus, you would think she's got to be somewhat consistent
And what seems to be coming out of the RNC is one to stay the course and go along with what the voters have voted. And that is Donald Trump. So that would be in antithesis to this anti-Trump movement. And I want you to really expand a little bit more, because some people are sensing this anti-Trump movement is, you know, a lot to do, you know, just about the media ginning something up as opposed to there being a real force and influence and possibility there in Cleveland. What do you say?
Well, I do think that there's a lot of smoke, but not any fire, as far as the Never Trump movement goes, and as far as organizing at the convention to stop him goes. You are going to need, at the very least, even if they cannot pass something out of this committee, out of the Rules Committee, if they cannot pass a resolution that would unbind the delegates or allow delegates to vote their conscience or anything else they can come up with to try and stop Trump on the convention floor, even if they don't get a majority to pass it, they can sort of exploit a bit of a procedural loophole, and they can pass a minority report, which would require them to have 25% of the votes on the committee. That means they would need 28 members. I know I'm going a little bit into the weeds here, but just so people understand this fully, they would need 28 members of the Convention Rules Committee to vote for something in order to then pass what's called a minority report, and then that minority report would go to the floor of the convention for an up or down vote by all of the delegates. The problem is that even to get that minority report, they would need 28 out of the 110 members on the committee. And as of right now, the most bullish estimate I've heard is 23. And I learned a long time ago in journalism, when you're covering these things, to never believe any estimate that isn't, you know, at least 125% of the votes needed. So if they say there are 23, they're probably at like 18 or 19. And, you know, so if they were at like, if they were in the mid 30s, then maybe you'd believe they have a chance. But right now, I don't think they're even close to having the numbers that they need.
Well, that's where that term close enough for government work comes into play, right? When it comes to numbers. I mean, we grew up understanding, you know, whenever there was a number that was kind of close, and so what if it was a 5 or 10% swing? They'd say, well, that's close enough for government work.
Yeah, and you know, look, you've got people who are fully invested in opposition to Trump. They are spending lots of money. They are hiring very prominent lawyers to handle some of this for them. There's been a lot of conference calls and a lot of meetings. And this is, you know, it's not like it's some Keystone Cops operation. I mean, you've got some smart people behind it. The problem is it's just such an unprecedented move to try to unseat and effectively replace the presumptive nominee, somebody who not only won the thing fair and square, but who won more votes than anybody in the history of the Republican presidential primary process. It's just, it's such a heavy lift that, you know, these people, to say that they have their work cut out for them would be just a huge understatement. I mean, it's just an incredibly daunting task in front of them, and it's very, very difficult to see how they would succeed.
Well, the lefty publications are doing everything they can to, you know, keep the you know, this energy ginned up. I mean, coming up with potential scenarios of John Kasich over Hillary Clinton, anybody else but Trump, to try to demonstrate. Mitt Romney, supposedly his family has told him, you know, you need to run. I mean, this could be a disaster. And even though we're waiting on a news conference with James Comey today from the FBI announcing whether or not it seems to be. This could be a you know, the long-awaited you know, presser that we've been looking forward to see if the government is going to if the FBI is going to push forward for an indictment.
Yeah, and you know, there's no happy ending here for Republicans. I mean, I'd be shocked if he announces that there is an indictment, and if there's not, then it's going to be, well, you know, then what happened on that plane in Phoenix, and beyond that. You know, let's listen to these three and a half hours of testimony that Hillary Clinton gave to the FBI over the weekend. You know, they're going to, you know, Republicans are gonna try to milk this thing for all it's worth. And at the end of the day, I think obviously the brutal reality here is that if they had a nominee who was sort of a little bit of a better messenger, a little bit more appealing to a broader segment of the electorate, then they would probably be able to make hay out of this a little bit better than they are with Donald Trump. It really hurts the party. And, you know, not just at the top of the ticket, but down ballot in a lot of these Senate and House races, it hurts the party to not have somebody who can fully capitalize on what is just a brutal stretch of publicity for the Hillary Clinton campaign, regardless of, you know, what Comey announces today.
Exactly. Well, I think it's quite interesting. President Obama is flying with Hillary Clinton. to her next, campaign stop. And if, in fact, Comey was, I would think, optically, looking at it ahead of time, saying, well, if he was going to make an announcement, it was going to be negative to Hillary Clinton. I'm not sure the president would want to be on the same flight with her. Do you?
No, I'm not sure. Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, look, the optics here are bad either way, frankly. If Comey announces that, there's nothing to see here and we're not going to indict while she's on the plane with Obama, that doesn't look great. And if he announces that we are going to indict, then, boy, that to be a fly on the wall inside that plane. So, either way, the timing is a little bit strange, although I do think it's a little bit overdue. I'm surprised, frankly, that it took us until, early to mid-July for this announcement. The Benghazi report maybe finally publishing was what the campaign was waiting for and what the DOJ was waiting for. I'm not quite sure, but, I think that the Clinton headquarters in Brooklyn will just breathe a big sigh of relief after that press conference finishes up today, assuming that it's the announcement we all expect it will be.
Well, Tim, we got about a little over a minute left. Getting back to Enid Mickelson, what do we know about her other than that she is, she's being asked to be the establishment's enforcer at the GOP convention. But what can you tell us about her background that we need to keep an eye out for?
She was a one-term member of Congress and, didn't have a terribly high profile in Congress. She actually left when there was a scandal involving her ex-husband and some money laundering, and it was sort of a mess. It was over a decade ago. And ever since then, she's basically just been a party loyalist. She's held almost every possible position in the Utah Republican Party. She's climbed the ladder to be the national committee woman. And on the RNC, she has been kind of a key player behind the scenes, getting a lot of things done for Priebus. She's viewed inside the RNC as kind of a heavy hitter and as somebody who, is, if you give a task to, she will get it done no matter what. So I think in that sense, it definitely makes a whole lot of sense for Priebus to appoint her to this job, assuming that he wants her to go ahead and push through on exactly, what the RNC wants is an uneventful, quiet convention where Trump gets nominated.
Let's unify the party. Tim Alberta on Bill Martinez. Thank you, Tim. It's just about 18 before the top of the hour right now.
The final phase of extermination is set to commence now. And as population die-off becomes evident, you know it is the time of punishment in all that is written. The cover for mass die-off is evolution and global warming frauds, also used as false proof of their Christ. They are from the lines that were disinherited 2,000 years ago. Now they claim to be his Christ based upon blood type, DNA, and long lifespan. Go to unveilingthem.com. That's UNVEILINGthem.com.
Blood pressure tends to run higher during the day and lower during nighttime sleep. However, many with high blood pressure don't exhibit this nighttime dip, a condition called non-dipping. More in today's AARP health tip after this.
At Walgreens, getting diabetes testing supplies with Medicare Part B is a walk in the park. Really? Because getting what you need is quick and easy, giving you more time for other things. There's $0 out of pocket on all major brands like AccuCheck and Walgreens TrueMetrics, and no extra paperwork. So managing diabetes becomes a stroll down easy street, or a trip to the movies, or even a day at the beach. Talk to your pharmacist today. Walgreens, at the corner of Happy and Healthy.
Zero out-of-pocket costs when billed to Medicare and full coverage supplemental insurance.
Non-dipping is a major risk factor for stroke, heart attack, and kidney disease. But studies show taking one or more of your prescribed blood pressure medications just before bedtime significantly decreases the risk. Of course, never change the timing of your medications without first consulting your doctor. For more, go to AARP.org.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson Adam Pulaski of the Pulaski Law Firm with principal office in Houston, Texas is the attorney responsible for the content of this ad. This ad is not legal advice, and the choice of a lawyer should not be based solely upon advertisement. Services may not be available in all states.
Attention Xarelto users. If you or a loved one took Xarelto and suffered a serious bleeding event, you may be entitled to financial compensation. Xarelto is a popular prescription blood thinner used to prevent blood clots and protect patients from strokes. These serious bleeding events have led to numerous cases of hospitalization and even death. Phone lines are open 24/7. Call 800-261-0937. That's 800-261-0937.
We use mobile devices right against our bodies every day, but growing scientific evidence has emerged showing serious health risks associated with exposure to EMF radiation emitted from these devices. The solution is Defender Shield, the most effective mobile radiation shielding ever developed. Defender Shield blocks virtually 100% of EMF radiation from cell phones, tablets, and laptops, and starts at just $64.99. Buy now at DefenderShield.com. For 10% off, use promo code GCN. DefenderShield.com, the worldwide leader in mobile radiation shielding.
Are you worried about your mom or dad living alone in their house? Hi, I'm Joan London. Listen, I know how difficult it is to find senior care for someone you love. That's why I recommend a free service called A Place for Mom. They are the nation's largest senior living referral service. Call A Place for Mom today.
To receive free information on senior living communities in your area, call A Place for Mom at 1-800-704-6182.
A Place for Mom offers free one-on-one advice from local advisors and a personalized list of senior living communities you can visit. If you have questions about senior care for your mom or dad, there's a place for answers, A Place for Mom.
Call A Place for Mom in the next 10 minutes to get your free ebook on financing senior care as well as free information on senior living communities in your area. Call 1-800-704-6182. That's 1-800-704-6182.
This is Dan Pilla. Do you owe the IRS money you can't pay? Are tax debts crippling you? I've defended people from the IRS for over 30 years. I've helped thousands, and I can help you too. I wrote the book on IRS settlement, and I'm telling you, there's no such thing as a hopeless case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX to finally get free of IRS debt. With the IRS's new programs, there's never been a better time to solve your problem. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. That's 800-34-NO-TAX or my website, danpilla.com.
Bunker Hill, Gettysburg, Normandy. They mean something. Bill Martinez, live.
This whole crazy world is just too frustrating, and you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, you don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
Bill Martinez, live.
Okay, you know, you go back to the 60s, and that song echoes, and once again, we seem to be at the brink of the abyss here in this country of ours. And if we're going to get it back on track, our next guest will agree. I mean, she has been at the head of a grassroots movement since 1964, has just affected a remarkable legacy for herself and for conservatives. She has been the national leader of the conservative movement since the publication of her best-selling book in 1964, A Choice, Not an Echo, which she amended here recently. And I was blessed to get a signed copy of that book, and she doesn't realize how much of a blessing that is to me, because even when, you know, Phyllis and I first got together 8 years ago when I came to the microphone in this particular position and hosting a national talk show, we connected right away. And it was, you know, just for me, an instant affinity and affection for Phyllis, for her hard work and what she represents in the battle of pursuing truth, what she has done with eagleforum.org, and how she's led so many of us and encouraged so many of us to a grassroots movement. Because if America is going to get back on track, you've heard me say this, and I will repeat it again and again. It is a mantra, but it is one with power that is behind it, because it is based on we the people. It is going to, if we're going to get this country back on track, it's going to be because we the people have made it so, not because the elites. Bill
Schlafly. That's what we're seeing. That's what we're seeing this year. The grassroots are rising up, and the kingmakers are simply, well, you know, the most enjoyment I've had on television in years is watching the dismay of the kingmakers who can't stop Trump. They've tried so hard, but they can't do it.
Well, and look what happened in Europe, Phyllis. I mean, if that isn't a portend of things to come here in America, I mean, they falsified the polls there in England. They're falsifying them here again. And I've told our listeners to be careful in being influenced by these polls, because they are juicing these numbers just like they've been doing the unemployment numbers and all the other numbers that happen to come from the government.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And I think lots more people are looking for good jobs and are identified in the unemployment ranks.
Well, before we get into the main topic that I wanted to talk to you about, the stunning immigration victory against Obama, you know, in seeing your book, I have it here on, you know, my library in a prominent position, a choice, not an echo. And, you know, here it is. This is something that you've been talking about since the 60s that came out of the movement here, the conservative movement, that there needed to be a clear delineation between the parties, Democrat and Republican. The problem that we've had in recent years, and they've become so homogenized that there's not a distinct identification. But then comes along Donald Trump, and here it is. We have a choice, not an echo.
That's right. And when people ask me why I endorse Trump, I say, you've got to read A Choice, Not an Echo, because there's the whole explanation. The kingmakers have been running the show for years, and we're fed up with that. They've given us a whole series of losers, and we want the grassroots to pick the candidate we want.
Well, here it is. I mean, look at what our founding fathers had intended for our country. And, you know, with any kind of sobriety, Phyllis, you see we've missed the mark and we've lost our way. But yet the kingmakers would rather that we stay the course because they're doing very well, thank you very much, while Main Street America is getting pulverized. And yet the rhetoric that comes out of the establishment is that, oh, we're better than ever. And, you know, middle class is doing great. And we've created all these great new jobs and everything else. And, you know, people are looking around in Main Street America and going, who's got a better job?
Yeah, that's right. And the jobs are going to the foreigners. And they're bringing in all these people who don't believe in America, don't believe in what we believe in, which is limited government and private initiative and so forth. And it's time for the grassroots to rise up and have somebody really kick the kingmakers.
Yeah. Well, Phyllis, how would you like to be an immigrant waiting in line? I mean, I talked to Irish John out of Ireland. He's been waiting in line for over 10 years. And if you heard his story, he is such a quality person. You say, he's the kind of guy we want in. You know, he wants to assimilate. He wants to advance the cause of freedom and add to the proposition of this democratic republic, not take away. But yet we've opened up our borders. We're getting flooded with people that could care less about our country, our values, our people. And they are upending and taking advantage of the freedoms. Thank you very much, the Obama administration. I'll put it right at his doorstep because he is the president of the United States. And as one famous president once admitted, the buck stops there, doesn't it?
Well, it certainly does. And Obama brings them in and puts them on the welfare handouts of all kinds. And there are all kinds of goodies and money that their government hands out to these refugees. And then one of the worst things they do is to settle them in communities that don't want them. And that's happening all over the country. And the American people realize that immigration is the big issue. And I think that's the main thing about Trump's rise in popularity. He's addressed and discovered and talks about the main issue.
Mm-hmm. Well, Phyllis, how does it make sense to settle people in an area where the people don't want them there? I mean, how are they going to assimilate? I mean, we had a conversation with Tas Sada, who wrote the book, The Mind of Terror. He's a Palestinian. He grew up in the Middle East. And as a Palestinian, they're like boll weevils without homes. And everywhere they went, they felt like they were unappreciated, unaccepted. So their response was to, you know, to fight back. And this is what we're creating. I mean, we're creating our own homegrown terrorists because we're not welcoming them into the country. And I understand, you know, one thing about illegal versus legal, but this is the problem. We're not giving our immigration policy a fair chance to be successful when we are, you know, we're upending it with these broken laws.
No, and you realize these people coming in have no experience with limited government and with individual initiative and so forth.
Exactly.
They think the first thing they think of is what is the government going to do for me or against me, and they depend on the government to make those decisions, and that's not the American way. And it's true. In the 1920s we had something that was called a pause, and I think that's basically what is being demanded at the present time. Mm-hmm. We've got to have a pause in all this rush of people coming into our country until we Well, until we can vet on them, and I don't know when
exactly.
That's going to be.
Well, especially when you have our own security department saying there's no way we can vet them. We have the president that counters that. But the people that are on the ground level,
yeah,
whose responsibility.
Anyway.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is most incredible. Phyllis, you as an attorney could appreciate what recently happened with this immigration victory against Obama. But it was a bit hollow with a 4-4 split. It means that this could come back to the Supreme Court. This is why the choice of president, probably now more than ever, we're looking already at one replacement, a Supreme Court justice. We're saying two, maybe even three in the next 4 to 8 years being replaced. I mean, a liberal.
That's why this presidential election is the most important one of our time. We want to have somebody who will appoint people to the Supreme Court who really believe in America. As Trump says, who want to make America first.
Exactly.
And, of course, Obama doesn't. He wants America to be like everybody else. And we don't want to be like everybody else. We want to be first. We want to be first in military superiority. We want to be first in jobs. We want to be first in all kinds of things. Because, and that's why people want to come here, because they thought we were first.
Exactly. Well, Phyllis, you know, again, as an attorney, and you see the ruling that came down in this immigration victory, the fact that you even had four justices going along with this illegal, blatant illegal activity and decision of the President of the United States, I mean, that is quite profound. And I think, you know, I've been saying, in my understanding, I'm not an attorney, but just from my point of view, I believe this is almost an impeachable offense.
Well, we tried impeachment with Clinton.
I'm not talking about Clinton. I'm talking about the justices here, Phyllis. I mean, the only way we can get rid of these justices is that we, you know, they can be impeached. If they're promoting violating the law and violating our U.S. Constitution, do we not have standing on that basis?
Yes, and you know, we ought to remind them of the oath they took when they became a judge. I can't recite it, but maybe you can recite it. Mm-hmm. It's a very wonderful oath, and they ought to obey it. If they're not obeying it, they ought to be kicked out.
Well, and this is the problem, you know, speaking of any kind of oath. You know, today, America, we take our oaths lightly. You know, when you think what our founding fathers had to lay on the line, they had to fall on their sword, their blood, their treasure, everything, their future, their families, was all on the line for the sake of this great American experiment. And this is what July the 4th should remind us of, and we should not take it casually. It is a royal responsibility.
That's right, it should. And for further info, go on eagleforum.org.
There it is, eagleforum.org, the one and only author of A Choice, Not an Echo, a must-have book, I say, in your library. And not only in your library, but you should have it in front of you and reread it. It will cause you to fall in love with this country, with conservative values, and appreciate that you don't have to apologize for conservative values, especially when you consider...
That's why we need a change in who's running this country, and I think Trump is that change, and he's not afraid to do it.
Amen. Phyllis Schlafly, national leader of the conservative movement since the publication of her book that we've been bragging about, A Choice, Not an Echo. Phyllis, always
a good book.
It's still a good book. You got it. Phyllis, thank you again for coming on. Always a pleasure.
You've seen crazy diets to lose weight? Well, at Bill Martinez Live, our healthy body weight loss system simply nitrifies the body, bringing down cravings. It's been proven that nutritional deficiencies drive appetite for carbs, sugars, and fats. Lose weight the easy way. Fighting cravings is a fool's game. Give the body what it needs to be satisfied. Find us at BillMartinezLive.com, longevity, or call 855-305-8326. Again, 855-305-8326.
There is an affordable alternative to the high cost of healthcare that offers freedom from insurance while providing compliance with the Obamacare individual mandate. Imagine having access to quality, affordable healthcare that allows you the freedom to choose your doctor and hospital. Members can share up to 100% of necessary medical expenses, including some alternative treatments. Find out how you and your family can contain healthcare costs without giving up your freedom. Go to LibertyOnCall.org. That's LibertyOnCall.org.